This is a Glassbox Media podcast.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hello and welcome to The Blank Podcast, the podcast where we delve into those difficult moments with some well-known guests. I am Giles Paley-Phillips, and with me, but not with me, is Jim Daly.
With, I think, as I said on a previous podcast, with you in spirit.
Yes, and visually with me.
And visually, yeah, exactly. Yes. Which actually is something we'll talk about on this week's pod with our fantastic
straight
guest.
In.
You know me, I like to just get straight to the point. Carrie Hope Fletcher, who we've just spoken to and was absolutely wonderful. But we do talk about this, the medium of vision, you know, and the fact that actually when we do these podcasts over Zoom, and the context of the pod is talking about sort of Instagram and sort of trolling and stuff on Instagram versus Twitter. But actually when you see someone, you know, you can see each other. I think it gives you more of a connection. And I hope that's the same for our guests on our podcast, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was good because I think we started doing a couple via a different way, which was just audio, and it just didn't have the same feel. I think it's really important to be able to see each other. Also, it means you don't interrupt each other as much, although that's not so true in this podcast because you and I keep
we're so on the same wavelength that we keep asking questions at the exact same time.
Also, I've a few people have said that we sound quite alike. They don't ever know how to differentiate
really?
Us.
Really? I'm offended, sir. No, I feel like we sound... Well, we've both got southern home counties accents, so we don't have, you know, regional accents. But you have a more south coast. You have a more south coast accent, whereas I have a more home counties accent. I think.
Yeah, I do tend to drop my T's if I'm not paying attention. That's quite a Sussex thing, I think.
I do that as well, but then I grew
up in little.
Yeah, I do that. Little. My mum tells me off for that, but I grew up in Kent, so maybe it's not too far from Sussex, is it? So maybe.
Yeah. Same sort of region. So yeah.
Anyway.
Anyway, before we do our podcast, I've got a nice tweet here from Waggers 66.
Hello, Waggers.
Ian Waghorn.
He's a Palace fan, Jim.
Is he? Well, he's a good man.
He's a Palace fan. Top man.
Good work, Ian. I'm gradually consuming previous episodes of Blank Pod because I don't want to eat all the sweets at the start of the journey. How lovely was Izzy City singing at the end of her podcast?
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
We did manage to get a bit of Izzy and her band at the end of that that episode. The conversations are so interesting and real. Lots of positive stuff. Thanks, lads.
Thanks, Waggers.
Yeah, that was a great... That's a lovely message. Thank you so much. That was a great episode. And everyone really should go and follow Izzy on Twitter because every day she does her sooty sweep.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Yeah,
which
it's
is,
good.
Which is her broom, putting the broom around her house and all the debris left by her kids. It's fantastically funny. Every day there's sweet corn.
Sweet corn gets everywhere, doesn't it? And I've got an iTunes review here, a 5-star iTunes review, I should say, from Harryhausen, who says, like having an afternoon coffee and chat. I love the easygoing feel of this podcast and the fairly unstructured format. It's basically a relaxed chat with a guest, often about their career history or trajectory, but often spirals off into random little stories. You will often learn things about your guest you never thought you would. Great for listening while cooking, I find, says Harry. That's nice.
That is nice.
Lovely. I like to think that we're accompanying people while cooking.
I've been doing a lot of cooking recently.
Yeah.
It's been one of my lockdown things.
You're a big fan of cooking, though. That's one of your things, isn't it?
Yeah, I like it a lot. And actually, I've been sharing a few recipes with one of our past guests.
Oh, yeah?
Gary Lineker.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Amazing.
I've been sending Gary pictures of barbecues I've done, whether he wants them or not. And I did a aromatic Peking duck the other night, which we had with like pancakes, you know, you have with hoisin sauce and stuff. So I did that. I sent that to Gary, and he sent me a very nice picture of a pork belly that he'd cooked at the weekend. So yeah,
food friends.
But yeah, so yeah, so cooking has been a really good distraction.
Well,
actually,
if anyone else listens to us while cooking, then let us know. Our email address is theblankpodcast2018@gmail.com, or we're on all social platforms at @blankpod. I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, I'd like to see some pictures. That's what I'm into. Yeah. So, and you've got to. I only buy cookery books with pictures in.
Yeah, I think I would do as well. Yeah.
So yeah, because it's nice to see the pictures. So yes, if you have cooked a Sunday roast or even just an evening pasta,
yeah.
Listening to the
Blank Podcast. And why don't you tell us, send us a photo, tell us what you've cooked and who you've listened to, which episode.
Yes, and we'll try and read
it
out. It's
like a dinner guest game, isn't it?
Yes, and we read it out, and actually we're maybe creating a new podcast.
Maybe, we can get our guests back on and cook. I'd be like, be too much like table manners, wouldn't it?
Yeah, there's loads of podcasts that do it. Jess Fortescue does one.
Actually, that's a good podcast. Right, let's crack on with our guest this week. Just like Harry said, we go off on little tangents, thought we do. But we've got the wonderfully talented Carrie Hope Fletcher, who joined us on the Blank Podcast.
I've never owned a pair of distressed jeans, actually, I have to say.
No, I haven't either. I never really go for jeans.
No, aren't you? You're not a jeans person.
No, not really. Not unless they're elasticated.
I love how we have all the deep chats on this podcast. Are you a jeans person?
Yeah.
Oh dear, straight in.
I am a jeans person. Jim,
I was pre-lockdown. Now I'm very much a sweats person.
Are you?
Big time. Big time. Yeah. Comfort over style for me.
Absolutely.
My children have definitely... It's all like tracksuit top and bottoms. Yeah. Neither of them are into any sport.
Just a sport aesthetic.
But they just love comfort clothing, I think. I don't know if I've even... I have got a pair of tracksuit bottoms, but...
Embrace the tracksuit, mate. Embrace the sweats. Yeah.
You got it right now.
Yeah,
you
I think big time. Carrie, how are you, anyway?
Yeah, good, fine. Plodding along, you know, as everyone is. Just trying to get through this very, very weird time. I feel like I've also said weird time maybe about 40 million times during lockdown. This strange, unprecedented time. That's the sentence that
it's the unprecedented,
for.
I think, has become like the go-to word, isn't it? Because it makes you sound slightly more intellectual.
Yes.
Does it?
It doesn't make me sound more intellectual because I don't know if I ever say it quite right. Unprecedented. But yeah, I think... Yeah, it's a very surreal time. How's it affected your sort of day-to-day life? Obviously, you're at home, clearly, but about with work and stuff like that, has it affected you quite badly?
Yeah, because all the theatres are closed and that's my day-to-day job, going to the theatre in the evening or being in rehearsals during the day. And it's just sort of thrown us all into this weird downward spiral. And of course, like, we don't know when it's going to end. I think that's the scary thing. I think, you know, we're all kind of quite appreciating a little bit of time off from the hectic schedule that is theatre. But it's the scary thing is not knowing when this is going to end, not knowing when we're actually going to go back and when the theatres are going to reopen. And everyone's sort of guessing that theatres and sport and that kind of thing are going to be the last thing to open because they are mass gatherings. You know, you've got like 1,000 to 2,000 people in one place in every theater. So the chances of them being the first things that open after lockdown are it's quite slim.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be hard to, it's going to be very hard to self-isolate in a theatre unless you just put like four or five seats in between everyone and then you've got a half empty theatre. So you lose that connection that you have anyway, the whole point of it.
Yeah.
Well, I heard the guy, the person who runs the Royal Opera House was on Newsnight last night and he was saying, yeah, if they self-isolated the crowd, there'd only be like 100 people in there or something, you know. So it's just
also,
impossible.
How do you like self-isolate or like social distance a show? It's like, well, we used to have a sex scene here or we used to have a kiss here. Yeah. It's like, well,
yeah,
nope, not anymore.
Well, I do wonder whether people will start to create new shows that don't like have an aspect of self-isolation in them, self-distancing, like, you know, maybe a two-hander with only like two cast members and they have to stand on opposite sides of the stage.
Yeah, I am awaiting coronavirus. Yeah. Self-isolation.
You know it's going to happen. Yeah. You know it's going to happen.
Social distance for an exclamation mark. Exactly. Yeah.
Two exclamation marks, one at either end.
Yeah.
It is, I think you're right about the uncertainty. I mean, being a performer is an uncertain lifestyle anyway. So then you add on the uncertainty of when work's going to come back. You know, we've had performers on the podcast last few weeks, and I think it's heightened everyone's anxiety a little bit with this kind of not knowing what's happening.
Massively.
And I cling on to the fact that post-lockdown, when we can do live events again, everyone's going to be so desperate to see a live event that things will be packed out, hopefully. But maybe I'm being hopeful. I don't know.
Yeah, it is all about sort of wishful thinking at the moment. Yeah. But I think also with, you know, people who are creative or people who have jobs that are so temperamental and their schedules all over the place, there's always this weird sort of guilt that we feel anyway, regardless of lockdown, when we do have like days off or time in between jobs where we get to choose our own hours. You end up either working 24/7 and burning yourself out, or you don't work at all and you find yourself sitting in front of the TV playing video games for hours, and then you feel like so guilty about it, even though that time off is valid and, you know, it's fine, you're allowed to have downtime. But because we don't have those hours set out for us and we choose those own hours, it does come with a sense of guilt when you're like, oh, I'm gonna have a lunch break, I'm gonna have a long lunch break, oh, but I should be doing this and I should be doing that, and what would someone in a 9-to-5 job be doing right now? Oh, they'd be at their desk, you know, working really, really hard, so I should be too. But then when you're thrown into something like this, where it's like, well, we don't know when you're going back to work, so off you go, good luck. It's like, oh God, it is sort of a little bit terrifying, choosing your own hours and figuring out when to work and when not to work. And then if you run out of work because you work in a theatre, so what work can you actually do?
Yeah.
Like, it's just so bizarre.
The guilt is overwhelming, actually, at not creating enough. What are you like with that? What have you been doing? Have you set yourself any sort of task to do or had any sort of structure or anything like that? Because I totally get the guilt thing.
Yeah, me and my boyfriend luckily self-isolating together. So we've been doing a video every morning and a video every evening, one on his channel, one on my channel. So and that's massively given us some structure. So we wake up every morning, make the coffee, stick the camera on, film for like half an hour, then he'll edit his video that we've just filmed, I'll edit my video from the night before. And we've kind of got into a little bit of a routine. And there's other things like this that I'm like so grateful for. It's like, no, I've got a meeting at 10:30, I'll be in my office. Like,
well, I mean, the same for us, actually. Yeah, I mean, that's why we've continued to do the podcast, because for selfish reasons, really, it means that we've still got something to do and an outlet to, you know, and still connecting with people, which is, you know, obviously why we do it in the first place. But yeah, very much so, trying to create, just keep creating stuff, really. I think that's been,
I think that connection as well, because, you know, I'm self-isolating with my wife, our mother-in-law, and we've got an 8-month-old baby. But you miss the connection to your mates or your work colleagues, you know, if you're performing or whatever. It's made me appreciate that a lot more. I've actually chatted to my mum and dad more during the lockdown than pre, which is a terrible thing to say, isn't it? And I'm going to try and be better post-lockdown. But we do a regular Saturday family Zoom night now, which is lovely. But I think it has made people reassess and reevaluate those connections in a way, in a sort of weird, perverse way.
Yeah, totally. I'm definitely seeing more of friends that I haven't seen in forever because we do a weekly quiz. And it's really nice because I thought it'd die out after a while. I thought it'd be like, oh, God, not another quiz. But everyone's like really excited about it. And we get new people joining every week. So that's been really lovely. And it's friends that I just wouldn't see normally because a lot of them are theatre friends and they're just in different shows or they're touring around the country and I just never would see them otherwise. But we're all kind of making a point to all be at this quiz every Friday.
Do you think that'll continue post... Sorry, Giles. Do you think that'll continue post-lockdown? Do you think we'll all be better connected or do you think we'll return to our ways?
I hope so. I hope so, but I feel like we're all just going to return to our ways. I feel like that's just human nature, sadly. I think we'll all, like, have these ideas of holding on to things. And I think every now and again we'll probably remember and be like, oh, yeah, I should probably give that person a call. But I don't think it'll be... a weekly thing, sadly.
No, do you know,
that might just me being really
pessimistic.
You're right.
No. Do you know what? It's funny because in my own head, I was saying to my wife, I was saying, oh, we should definitely carry on these quizzes because we're doing one every week. And I said, maybe we could just do it. We could do it once a month. I'd already like pre-rolled
back.
Besides myself, the fact that we're not going to do it every week anymore. No one will want to do it every week when we go back to normal. We have to do it once a month. Or maybe they would do it bi-monthly. Maybe like every 6 months. It'll just be a Christmas quiz. And slowly and slowly, like in your head, you start to unravel it a little bit. Anyway, yeah, it's funny that the new normal, as we're all calling it now, is it's certainly been a time of reflection for me.
Has it been a time of reflection for me? I thought about this morning, actually, because I've had a bit of a personal breakthrough today where I won't go into it, but I had a weird relationship with... someone that friends of a friend's, and I did something really bad in the past, basically 8 years ago, and I apologized a few days ago to this person, and I don't know if that was through reflection. I think it was more through me feeling really guilty, which I had done for ages, and I got an email back today saying they accepted my apology, and it's actually the best thing that's happened to me during the lockdown. I feel amazing. I feel so glad that I did that. So yeah, I wasn't going to share that today, but it just sort of came out when Charles was talking about reflection. But maybe it has. Maybe the lockdown has made me kind of question those things a bit more and be a bit more proactive about it. I don't know. It's weird. We've never been in this situation before. So maybe it's all making us do weird things.
That sounds like reflection to me.
It must be. It must be.
Yeah. Yeah, I think when you're given sort of a ridiculous amount of time, you do find yourself with more time to think. And especially because we're all self-isolating as well. It's not like we can distract ourselves with going out with friends and mates and family and whatever. You are just kind of sat with your thoughts more often than you would be, than you'd choose to. So, yeah, I think I found myself sort of connecting with friends that I've lost touch with. Like, not even friends that I've, you know, they're in my social group anyway. I just don't see them because of circumstances. Like, friends that I've sort of drifted away from. I've definitely found myself connecting with people like that.
Yeah. It's funny how it's taken this crazy thing for us to do that.
I know. It is a little bit sad, isn't it?
Yeah, we should all be doing this anyway. But you know, whatever. If we come out of this with a little bit of a sort of personal journey or something, or we learn... I feel like Jerry Springer or something at the end, or I feel like I'm at the end of a sitcom wrapping up. Like JD at the end of Scrubs, you know. But if we've all learned something through this pandemic, then it has been worth it. But that's not far off, actually. You know, I think, you know.
But it reminds me of what people say about, like, Mother's Day or Father's Day or Valentine's Day, when people are like, we should be doing this every day of the year. We should be showing our mums that we love them every day. It shouldn't just take one day. It kind of feels like that. Like, it shouldn't take a worldwide pandemic to make us all go, do you know what, Mum, I love you.
Exactly.
Absolutely, yeah. Now, Carrie, we normally start the podcast. We have started, obviously, already. But we normally start by talking about growing up and school and stuff. And now... I realised that you started performing very early. So, and you're born in Harrow, weren't you?
Yes. South Harrow, was it? South Harrow, yeah.
Yeah. And so was school slightly different for you, I guess, because you were performing?
Yeah. I mean, I never went to a drama school or a stage school. I kind of made a... I mean, when I was very young, that just didn't occur to anyone, because who would have thought when I was like three that I'd want to be an actress? I actually wanted to be an archaeologist like Indiana Jones. But that's
me too.
But yeah, I my first job was when I was 7 years old, which is primary school. I think it would have been like year three. which was Les Mis. And because that's a 6-month contract, I think it was 6 months, 3 months or 6 months, a shorter contract than an adult would have. And we do like 2 or 3 performances a week. So there'd be 3 teams of children. One team would do 2 shows. The next team would do 2 shows. The next team would do 2 shows, and it would go on. So on and so forth. But that would mean every now and again, there'd be a Wednesday matinee day that I'd have to do, which means I'd have to be pulled out of school. So it didn't go unnoticed that, why is Carrie allowed Wednesdays off? Why is she allowed time off school? Which naturally, when you're kids, that does create some kind of like weird tension, like, and some weird jealousy, like not even of what they're doing, just the fact that they get time off school. That's not fair. You know what I mean? And I went to a primary school that's not, I don't know how to put it nicely. It was a bit rough. There was rumours that I think were confirmed after a year or so that there was an ice cream van that used to park outside the school. And you know those ice creams that had like the bubble gum bit at the bottom? Screwballs or something like
screwball,
that?
Screwball.
There was an ice cream van who used to fill that bottom bit with drugs and sell it to kids.
Not where I thought that was going. Hey. Oh my God.
That's beyond rough.
Yeah, so it was a little bit rough. A little bit rough.
Wow.
Jeez.
Yeah. And yeah, it was a weird dynamic at that school because I don't think my headmistress liked me very much either because I had to, you know, get permission to have all that time off. And there were just weird stipulations and weird rules that came with having that time off. Like I was never allowed to enter a school talent show and I was never allowed to have a part in a school play. I'd always have to just be in like...
That's so harsh.
The sideline. Yeah. So it's just like really weird things to put on a 7-year-old child.
Massive.
Like, yeah. But my high school was unbelievable. I had a great time at high school. I went to a private all-girls school. And weirdly, the year that I joined, they just built this big, like, performing arts centre. It was serendipity at its finest. But yeah, I had a great time at school. I loved school. High school, especially. I thought it was amazing. Yeah, just, you know, when I've just felt so lucky to have teachers that didn't... they really nurtured the fact that I was into music and performing arts. It wasn't like, well, you should be learning your 7 times table or you should be learning Pythagoras' theorem or whatever. It was like, well, no, if that's what you're into and that's what you know you want to do with your life, then we're going to make a special effort to make sure that that's where we guide you. And they had a real knack of doing that with loads of different students. Like all of my friend group, you see that what they were interested in when they were kids is what they have gone on to do. And I firmly believe that was to do with all of our teachers.
That's good. Yeah, I mean, Pythagoras' rule, something that I've literally never used in my life post-secondary school. Not even once. Complete waste of time.
Pythagoras what?
Pythagoras' rule. Isn't that what it's called?
Yeah, Pythagoras' theorem.
That's not me being supportive, being like, Pythagoras' rules, man. And that's not...
Yeah, it's so cool. Into it.
It's nice that you got that support because, you know, your story of primary school, like... God, kids need so much support, you know, all the time, especially if they're really into something. It's really unfair that you didn't get that. It's...
Well, particularly from the leader of the school. I mean, you think, do you know what I mean? Like, you'd think that they would at least have some sort of comprehension of...
We had to ask permission because I think I did Les Mis and Chitty as a child at that school. And I remember having to ask for time off. Or my parents had to ask on my behalf for time off to do Chitty. And the headmistress wrote on the letter, but this is the last time.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
You'd think the school would be really proud of that. And they'd, like, champion it and celebrate it.
I mean, we've got,
you know, a student performing in these massive shows. Like, just...
Yeah.
Yeah, no. That is... Well, I'm glad that you've had a better experience at secondary school.
Oh, God, yeah. It was like worlds away. Yeah, it was amazing.
And so by the time you got to secondary school, I guess you were really... Obviously, you'd done a few shows, so you were really... You'd found your thing, maybe.
Yeah. I think I knew quite early on, because my brother went to a stage school. He went to Sylvia Young's, and he's... You know, I come from a very musical family, but I think... I'm right in saying that my family are quite, like, privately musical. Because my mum was a learning support teacher at a school, so there's no, like, music or singing involved there. And my dad used to work at a Kodak factory in silver recovery. To this day, I still have no idea what silver recovery means. But that's what he used to do. I just remember him coming home in his high-vis jacket with really grubby fingers. That's all I remember. So again, not a very musical job, but my dad plays guitar and he used to sing in a band that used to play in like pubs when he was younger. And my mum sings in the car and you can tell that she's got a good voice, but she'd never like actually, my mum, like we don't even have pictures of my mum. She's so averse to attention that she can't even stand in front of the camera and just have a picture taken. If she goes missing, we've got nothing to show the police. Nothing.
Just start drawings or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd have to do a sketch of what my mum looked like. So yeah, but they love musicals and they love music. And so it was a huge part of our upbringing, even though it wasn't, you know, outwardly what they were interested in. So yeah, it was, my brother went to a musical theatre school and I think I sort of just stumbled into it that way because it was just normal because I was the second child and that's just what my brother did. He was interested in performing. It kind of just naturally filtered into my everyday life. And it would have been weird, I think, if I'd suddenly been like, I want to be an accountant. Like it would have been really strange.
Do silver
like, where
recovery.
Did that come from? Yeah, exactly.
I don't know what it is. Well, no, I want to do it.
Yeah, following the family, following the family way.
Yeah, the family trade.
Classic
Zoom interviews.
I'm not looking at
they
you.
They were clearly supportive, though. I guess.
Oh, massively, massively. I always say that my greatest privilege was having my parents. They just instilled in me and my brother that we could do anything that we wanted to do if we were willing to put in the hard work. And we really believed that we had the talent to do it. And we were willing to make sacrifices and put in the time and the effort and the energy and sometimes the money that it takes. But we really could do anything if we wanted to.
Yeah. Really, really valuable yet quite simple advice, really.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so simple. It's so simple. As long as you're willing to put in the work, you can achieve anything. Yeah.
You'd obviously done these two shows when you were younger. What going back to those a little bit, what can you remember much about them?
Bits and pieces. Not a huge amount, to be honest. I kind of remember, I've got vague memories of being backstage with Brian Blessed.
Oh, wow.
And I remember, yeah, I remember having a sty on my eye and Michael Ball was like, the way to get that out is a gold ring, and took off his ring. And we were stood in the wings and he was like rubbing my eye with his ring. Like, I just remember really random stuff like that.
Wow.
That's definitely a claim to fame.
Yeah. I used to charge Brian Blessed for swearing. 50p for every time he swore.
Oh, you must have made a killing.
I've met Brian. I met Brian once. And yeah, he's incredible, the amount of swearing that he does.
Yeah, he still owes me a lot of money.
I bet he does, yeah. But yeah, just incredible to think, like, taking that all on at such a young age. I mean, and, you know, obviously you've moved through your career now, you're obviously a lot older, but to take on such big shows when you're so young, it must have been such a, I don't know, it's quite a burden in a way.
I honestly don't think I thought about it. I was seven when I was in Les Mis. Like, I just was excited and I enjoyed it. And it just felt normal. I know that sounds odd because it's not normal, because I was on a West End stage at seven and that's like mad to anyone who hears that. But because I was so young, I think I just, you know, was like, this is something I'd like to do. This is the same as my friends who want to go to the cinema at the weekend. I want to go and perform on a stage at the weekend. That was just like, and because I didn't really know anything different as I grew up, I just enjoyed it. I just loved it. It didn't feel weird, or it didn't feel like a pressure. And I think it was because it came from me. I think there are a lot of children who are like forced into it by pushy parents, or, you know, stage mums who wanted to make it as actresses and are now forcing their kids to do it, and they're living vicariously through their kids. I think then the kids will then probably feel the pressure because they feel like there's a lot riding on them doing well. But because my parents were like, if you want to do it, you can do it. If you don't want to do it, you don't have to do it. It's fine. Whatever you want to do. It was kind of my choice. So I'd never felt any kind of pressure. It was just something that I loved to do.
I think as well, when you're young, especially at that age, you don't quite understand the responsibilities of it or the magnitude of it, and then those pressures from yourself come later in life. When we get older, we then suddenly start it's like our minds expand and we suddenly think, oh God, I could be really bad at this. I could fail at this. And then all those pressures and anxieties start coming in. But I think when you're a kid, your brain's always not developed enough to even understand that stuff.
No, kids are fearless. And it's amazing now that I've had the opportunity to stay in this industry as an adult, because now I'm watching kids come into like Les Mis playing Gavroche and Little Eponine, which was the part that I played. And I just look at them and I'm like, was that what I was like? Because you're just fearless. Like you just, you know, we all don't want to be the person who, you know, when on the first day, everyone's got to go around and be like, hi, yeah, my name's Carrie Hope Pletcher and I'm playing Fontaine. But like no one, everyone's like, even though our job is to be on stage in front of an audience, we can't even say our own name and our own role in front of a room full of our peers. But the kids like stand up, they're like, yeah, my name's blah, blah, blah. And I played this part and I'm going to be really good. Like they're just so full of confidence and they are just completely fearless and they just throw themselves into what they're doing. And we all kind of, as an adult cast, look at them like so enviously. So like, oh, I wish I still had that. I imagine what I could achieve if I was that fearless.
Yeah. That's funny, isn't it? I wonder where we lose that. We obviously lose that along the way somewhere.
Yeah, I have no idea where. It'd be so interesting if we could pinpoint it to like avoid it happening.
Yeah. It'd be nice to be that fearless. It'd be nice to tap into that confidence. But obviously, I mean, when you're performing, you know, you're performing on stage, and we had this from other performers in our podcast, a lot of times it's like a fake confidence, you know, you sort of build it up to, and it's like, you know, if you're not feeling it or you're not feeling well, Dr. Theatre, you know, will help you on the night and stuff like that. But what are you like in moments like that? Do you have moments where you sort of, you're faking the confidence before you go on?
Yeah, I kind of think you have to, otherwise I personally would never do it. I hate being on stage as myself. And I think that's when I feel it the most, when I'm about to go on and do like like one song in a concert. That's my worst nightmare. I hate it. 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 Like I can't stress how much I hate it. It's just being myself on stage. I like having a character to hide behind and I like being told what to say. I like having my lines. I like having my lyrics. It's kind of like a foolproof plan not to fail, really, because how wrong can it go when you've been told what to say and you've been told what to sing and you've been told what to wear and where to stand? But when those things are left up to me, I'm like, no, please don't tell me what to say. I hate this. So I feel like I've got instant confidence when I'm told that, you know, you're going to be playing this part and here's your script and here's your score and here's your wig and here's your costume. I'm like, brilliant. I don't have to be me. There's my confidence in a starter pack. Thank you very much. Goodbye. Like that. I'm fine with that. It will take like a week to get into, to make sure I know what I'm doing and I know where I'm going in the run. But then after that, it's the best job in the world. I love it so
and
much.
There's a weird juxtaposition though. And yet though, when you're doing the YouTube stuff, that is you being you. And I guess it's not,
There's no audience.
But there is, but just not, you know, it's a virtual audience.
Yeah, and if I screw up, I've got the chance to just edit that out.
True, very true.
I can just cut it.
Very true.
Bye, yeah.
Very true, yeah.
That's the difference.
It's quite a crucial difference, actually, now I think about it.
Yeah, quite a big difference.
Would you, yeah, so you avoid kind of like doing live, would you like, you know, people doing live Instagrams and stuff like that? Do you like doing those sort of things?
Live Instagrams isn't so bad because, again, you don't really have any idea of how many, like, you've got the number at the top, but how much does that actually mean? Like, how much can you actually comprehend, you know, how many people that is, really? So I still get a bit nervous. Like, I did a live stream a few weeks ago to raise money for the NHS and I was singing as well. I was like, why have I done this? Why have I done this to myself? Why have I made myself sing? Why have I put myself in this situation? I came out. I pressed end and cried. Yeah. I finished and cried because like, no, I didn't sing that note as well as I should have. And because I wasn't playing a character and I was just me, now everyone's going to think I'm terrible. Oh my God. Like I'm the worst for beating myself up.
Oh.
I'm the worst. I am my own worst critic. There is nothing that anyone can say to me that I haven't already said to myself.
Yeah.
Yes. It's something that comes up on the podcast stuff. Look, we are often our worst trolls, aren't we?
Oh God, yeah. I am the worst. The worst. But it's like I've got like two people in my brain, and one of them's going, you're terrible, you're not good enough, you can't do this, and I've got another one being like, no, I deserve my place on the stage, no, I am good, and it's like just this battle between the two of them. Nothing's coming out of my mouth. It's just these two voices in my head having a go at each other, and it just depends on the day which one's stronger, which one's louder.
Yeah.
Again, is that something that's occurred as you've got older?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, I'm thinking, like, is it, has there always been an element of that during your time doing, particularly in the theatre when you're doing live stuff as well?
It came with social media. I'm telling you,
really?
Now, it came with social media. Yeah, 100%. 100%. I've got absolutely no doubt in my brain that it came from social media. Because when I was a kid and, you know, someone at school said something, it just didn't stick as well. And because I had my parents being like, oh, it's just a stupid kid at school, it doesn't matter, like, you know, that's not true, it's fine. But then when you all of a sudden you've got 1,000 people say that to you on the same day, or 1,000 people say that to you over the course of however much time, it starts to stick, it starts to build up. And it's like one voice you can go, well, that's not true, that was one voice, you can bat it off. But then all of a sudden when you've got like a barrage of people saying the same things to you day in and day out, so like you don't have enough hands to fend them all off. Some of them get through and get into your brain and you're like, oh my God, is that true? 10 people have now said that within the space of 20 minutes, so it must be true. It must be true. It really gets in your head.
Yeah, it's
a bit scary.
It's really scary. Because yeah. Social media is supposed to be this thing that's this wonderful tool that connects us all and, you know, makes us feel more one than ever. And actually, we hear so many times that it's actually the platform for loads of people's anxiety and depression. And like you say, you know, suddenly bringing this horrible sort of world onto you. It's really unfair, I think, is the word I get from it. It shouldn't be like that. And I don't understand why it's this part of the human psyche that people feel that they can do this. Like, I've sent tweets before about a TV show I didn't like or something, maybe taking a piss out of it. I've never sent a tweet directly to a person with anything personal. I can't imagine why I'd want to do that, even if I didn't like someone or something. I don't understand the psyche of someone's brain that would do that.
I think I've got like a slightly warped sense of what I should and shouldn't say online, just because I'm either so scared or I'm just so conscious of what I say. So like, even if I didn't like a TV show, I am so scared of saying anything about a TV show that I did. Or like, me and my boyfriend are watching the Marvel movies at the moment, like in chronological order. It's the best thing ever.
We just did that. Yeah,
we're having the best time with it.
In the time order, where are you at the moment?
We watched the second Guardians of the Galaxy last night.
Ah, the Guardians of the Galaxy movies are great.
They are so good. Yeah. They are so, so good. But there's a couple of those that I'm like, I wasn't there. And every time we film a video in the morning for my boyfriend's Good Morning World series, he'll be like, so what did you think of the film last night? And I'm like, it was great. I loved it. It was marvellous. Like, even though I'm like, it was rubbish. I hated that one. I'm just so scared of like voicing my own opinion because I know what it sounds like on the other end. Even if it's something that you're more than welcome to like having an opinion about, like people who write like negative Amazon book reviews. I'm like, did you really hate the book that much to then write a 12-page essay on Amazon about how much you hated it? Like, just pick up another effing book. Just read a different one. There's millions. Pick a different one. It's okay. It's just... And there's always, you know, there's the saying that not everyone's going to like you and that's fine. And not everyone's going to like you and that's fine. That's true. But I think there are so many people out there who don't understand that you aren't going to like everything and that's fine. Like, you don't then have to try and destroy that person because you didn't like them, or get that TV show taken off air because you didn't like that one episode, or you didn't like how Game of Thrones series 8 ended because it wasn't how you imagined it to end. It's like, just move on, pick a different thing. It's fine. It's okay. You're not going to like everything. You don't then have to destroy that thing because you didn't like it.
I do wonder sometimes people forget that it's a person on the end of that.
100%.
You know, it's, you know, they see it as, I don't know, you see you as a commodity or a product. And like you say, like it's easy to maybe it sometimes stems from like Amazon reviews as well, you know, like, oh, well, we can just slag that thing off because it's faceless and it's just something that we didn't get anything out of it, or we didn't like it or whatever it was. And I think that's often happens with particularly with trolling and stuff, is that we forget, people forgetting that it's a real person on the end of that attack.
Yeah. I kind of understand that when it's online because you can't see the person's face. And I say I understand it to an extent because it's something I'd never do, and I never understand people trolling and whatever. But I understand that it's easier to do stuff like that, to be a keyboard warrior, to say something horrible to someone when you can't see the effect that it has on someone, when you can't see someone burst into tears, you don't see what effect your words have had. But then the thing I find the most fascinating is people coming to stage door and saying those things to your
face.
No
way. Yeah. Really?
That's when you're like, okay, you're a special kind of human.
That's next level.
Okay, that's when you're sort of like, is social media giving us some kind of weird confidence that we are now saying these things that we would normally tweet to people's faces? I don't know. It's just strange.
Can you give us an example of what you might...
I had someone come... This isn't that bad, but I had someone come up to me and say, when I first heard that you were going to be playing Eponine, I thought you were going to be absolutely horrendous and you were right, I guess.
Oh, my God. And they probably thought that was a really nice thing to say or something.
Yeah. I was like, I don't know how to respond to that, so I'm just going to go, thanks, and leave. When I did the Les Mis stage concert last year with Alfie Beau, Matt Lucas, Michael Ball, and when I got told that my name was going to be like with them on the poster, I was like, that's unreal, because that's Matt Lucas of Little Britain and Alfie Beau, who's like one of the greatest singers of all time, and Michael Ball, who was in the original, he's like musical theatre royalty, and then me. I was like, this is really cool, this is amazing. And stage door every night was like packed. It was like hundreds of people deep. And I got to the, like, I was signing programs. And as I got to the end of this line, this woman went to me, what does it feel? What does it feel like that everyone standing here isn't waiting for you?
Oh my God. Why?
She like touched my arm. She touched my arm. She was like, what does it feel like that everyone here isn't waiting for you?
Fucking hell.
And I was like, you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like strange things like that. And I've overheard conversations as well where I've like almost intervened, like with like cast members of mine. Like someone, one of the covers was on one night in a show that I won't mention, but she was on and it was her first night on. And then the following day, the person who actually played that role came back and this girl said to her at stage door, just to let you know, I prefer your cover.
Oh my God.
Just to let you know, I prefer the person who covers you. Just so, like, why did you tell her
that? How about don't let me know? I don't need to know that.
Yeah. But that's the thing. It's like this weird arrogance that people have. Like, I have this opinion and I think you should, I think that you need to hear
it. It's like a power play. It's like a weird power play where the...
It's a very strange arrogance. Yeah.
It's very odd. I think you're right. I mean, you know, you raised the question earlier, has social media given people a weird confidence? I think the coincidence, you know, of that happening since social media's come in, yeah, probably. I think it probably is linked to it. And I was going to ask you, actually, off the back of that, have you done anything, have you spent time off social media, have you deleted certain apps? But then you're just talking about it happening at stage door. It's like, well, you can't stop that.
Yeah, that's when it gets... Yeah, I had a very scary experience last year as well, where it was when I just broke and I was like, I need to go and talk to someone professional about this because this has gone beyond social media now. I've actually not ever talked about it, so I'm gonna like briefly mention it. I've not talked about it because it was so scary and I just don't want it to happen again, but I'm still gonna brave it. I had someone send letters to lots of my castmates in the Les Mis staged concert and sent letters to someone who lives like not in London, miles and miles and miles away from London, found their address, God knows how. That's like where it gets really scary. and sent them a poster. This is really dark. You might want to cut this out of the podcast. But sent a poster advertising me as a prostitute.
Oh my God.
But as if I'd written it. So it had my agent's number and my agent's email address at the bottom of it. And it was like, if you want to come and have, you know, take part in my services, then call this number. But they sent them to everyone, like all my castmates, past castmates, cast members in different shows, friends of mine who live in different parts of the country.
Fuck.
Yeah. And that was when I was like, this has now gone beyond social media and I don't know how to deal with this anymore. When it was like contained on social media, I'd just delete apps, I'd block people, I'd mute people, it's all cool. But then all of a sudden it was like physical mail coming to, like, you can't block that.
Yeah.
You can't stop that. That's just going to arrive, whether I like it or not.
And that's more of an intrusion. So, social media is an intrusion in a way. That's next level intrusion. I mean, it's a criminal act.
Yeah. Yeah. We had to get the police involved and had to like report it. And every time a new one came in, I just asked my company back. I stopped receiving posts at the theatre. I just asked my company manager if anything arrived for me, could he take it and open it? He had my full permission to open it and vet it. And if it were, and we had, you know, we had to open everything with gloves because in case there were fingerprints on it that we could then trace.
Fucking hell.
And we had to put it all in like evidence bags and give it over to the police. It was just bonkers. It was just bonkers. And that was when I broke. That was when I was like, I need to speak to someone.
Yeah.
So then I started counselling last year, and it was like, counselling's like the short-term version of therapy. Yeah. So I finished my sessions a few weeks ago, and it's helped like tremendously.
Yeah. Counselling is amazing. Counselling is unbelievable. It is great. But that also sounds like such a tiring thing to go through. And while you're trying to concentrate on
it's
doing really your boring. Job well and crack on with stuff,
yeah,
you got this extra drain.
Yeah, so I think I just want to do my job and I just want to do it to the best of my abilities, and because I love doing it and I enjoy doing it, and that's kind of the extent of it. That's it. And I feel like I'm quite an uncontroversial person. Like, I feel like because I'm so scared of expressing my, you know, negative opinions, I just don't. And that's fine. Like, I don't feel like I'm censoring myself because I'll just tell my mum. I'll give my mum a ring and be like, I saw this film today and I thought it was rubbish. Like, it's fine. Like, I'm happy not putting those things online. But because of that, that's when I'm like, why do people hate me so much?
I don't think they do. I think it's a power thing. Sorry, Giles. I think it's a...
Well, and jealousy, yeah. And, you know, it's the deadly sins, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's those things. It's those natural things that come out. And I think probably because you are successful, you're brilliant at your job, all those sort of things, some people want to undermine that in some way.
I just think the disappointing thing is that sometimes there is, like, such valid criticism. There is, like, genuinely valid things that come out of conversations with people online. But because it gets buried in this barrage of just, I think you're fat and ugly and I think you're the worst person to ever exist, it means that you have to just close the door on all of it. There's no way to pick and choose unless you want to see all of it, which would just be so detrimental to anyone's mental health that it's just not worth it.
Yeah, and I think probably, like, sometimes the people that are doing these things are, there's something, obviously something not right with them mentally or physically or social self-esteem or something. There's obviously something innately in them that is which is sort of coming out, spilling out, and obviously, you know, that doesn't help you because you're going to be on the brunt of it. But I think generally it's as we've spoken about before, Jim, like, you know, it's generally something that's innately in someone that's not quite right, which is causing them to act out in that way.
Well, it's unfair that you're getting dragged into their madness. You're getting dragged into the mess of their lives and you've not asked to.
Well, yeah, I mean, with anyone it's unfair. And of course then you have horrible instances like Caroline Flack where it just goes so far beyond what anyone can understand that, you know, someone ends up taking their own life. And Caroline Flack is the one that we hear about because she's Caroline Flack. But how many times has that happened that we don't, it doesn't make the news because it is just someone's daughter. It's just someone's son, someone's child. It's so sad.
Yeah, it's not fair.
What do you think, I don't know, I'm not saying that you have the answers, but do you think there are things that social media companies can be doing more of to sort of prevent these sort of things happening?
At the moment, Instagram is just my favourite place on the planet because it comes with filters. You can, you know, put in a list of words that you just don't want to come up. So I've got a few ex-boyfriends in there. You know, like, or, you know, if someone, you know, you can put swear words in there or just, you know, just unpleasant things that you just like, words that you would not like to see on a daily basis. You just put them in and then any comment that contains those words, it just does, like, it still appears to the person who wrote it, but you don't see it, which I think is the genius thing. It doesn't stop the comment from existing. It just doesn't appear to you. Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing.
Well, I've done a similar thing on Twitter because you can mute words on there. So I've done that as well, you know. And I think you're right.
So
I think
those sort of things. Private messages as well, because we saw this week Ian Wright shared a private message that he got that was absolutely abhorrent. And that was from, he doesn't know this guy. That guy can still contact him and say these horrible things. You can't prematurely block everyone in case they're going to send that. So it's still difficult, isn't it, to stop that stuff coming in?
Yeah, it is really hard. It is really hard. I just think Instagram's got the edge on privacy and security and like monitoring stuff like that. I also feel just the difference between Twitter and Instagram, because Twitter is just text. It's just words. It's just people's opinions. And I feel like that generates more negativity and more hate than someone sharing a picture of their dog. Like, it's Instagram's very much like visual. Yeah. So what are the chances that someone's going to share a visual picture that's, you know, negative? It's very hard to do that.
But also, going back to what we were saying earlier about keyboard warriors and sort of people being abusive to faceless companies and stuff. On Instagram, when you can see people, you can see these people's faces, I think actually on a human level, that makes you have an instant more connection to them. So probably, hopefully, makes people feel less likely inclined or more comfortable to then send abuse because they can see this person, they've made a connection to them.
100%. Absolutely. Yeah, I think it makes the world of difference. And I think it makes the world of difference, but we don't realise it is. Just naturally, if we can see someone's face, we're not going to say the things that we would say if we couldn't.
Yeah. Feels like they might be there in front of us. So, because these people obviously would never, would never say these things to your face. But they have done at the stage door.
They do, but they just do it less.
It's very unfair. It's really unfair to be dragged into people's messes when all you've asked to do is just crack on with my life and my career. And you haven't asked to be.
Well, and also it's obviously having a bit of sort of a lasting effect on you because, like you were saying earlier, you've got these two voices now that are ringing in your head every time you're about to do a performance.
And it's very much like when I'm making decisions as well, because I've, you know, had a YouTube channel for the last almost decade, and seeing the way that the audience responds to what I'm doing and what I'm saying, and it now just everything I do, even if I'm not broadcasting it, there's a voice in my head that goes, now what would the mass audience think of this? If people could see you doing this, would they approve? It's that kind of thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's really changed your decision making.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I'm almost like censored even when I'm at home.
That's really interesting.
And no one ever sees it.
So you always feel sort of judged even when it's got nothing to do with anyone else.
Yeah. And that's me. That's something that I need to like fix within myself, because that is just the lasting effect. That's no one like making me feel that directly. That's just an indirect, like, weird byproduct of the last decade on the internet.
Yeah, that's interesting. Actually, I've never heard anyone sort of say that, but it makes total sense that you can get to that stage.
Well, yeah, just when you spend every day making videos and going, okay, well, I shouldn't say that because something similar I said in the last video got a negative reaction, or someone pointed out that that wasn't like the politically correct term that I should have used, or, you know, whatever the issue is, you then just naturally start to do that in everyday life, in like normal conversations. It's very strange.
and funny, this is something again we've talked about before, Jim, is that the fact that we will cotton on to like maybe one or two bad things, and then you've probably had like hundreds and thousands of amazing comments, but it's that one thing that we just fixate on.
Yep.
And that is so destructive, that one comment, you know.
But I've also learned that, because I used to just dig myself a hole, because I'd respond, you know, defending myself, and I'd, you know, well, I'm well within my rights to defend myself, but then I was just doing myself a disservice, because then I'd spend the next 3 hours defending myself. Whereas if I just deleted the comment, I would have been like, oh, that was a rubbish comment, and then just moved on with my day. I might, you know, been dwelling on it for all of half an hour, but because I decided to respond and the conversation went on for the next 3 hours, I then spent longer feeling rubbish, and that was my fault. That was my fault.
Yeah,
I've got no one to blame but myself. So I've learned very quickly, well, not very quickly, it's taken me ages, but I've learned now to very quickly delete the comment before I've even got any kind of notion of replying to
it. That's
absolutely. I think self-care, particularly on the internet, is essential.
And that's a huge part of it for me.
And it's hard to work that out sometimes, I think. And it's obviously taken you quite a long time to work it out.
It's taken me forever. I'm almost ashamed of how long it's taken me to figure that out. And I think, but again, I think a lot of that is because there's people who will then scream, that's censorship, you can't do that, you can't, you know, deny someone the right to say what they're going to say. It's like, no, they can still say whatever they want to say. I just don't want to hear it. They are more than welcome to say it to their mum. They are more than welcome to put it on their private Twitter. They're more than welcome to make a whole video about how much they dislike me. Don't send it to me.
I might start doing that. I might start bringing up my mum and just moaning about stuff I don't like. Just keep it. Just keep it between me and mum.
I think my mum loves it. I call her up and I'm like, you'll never guess what happened. She's like, oh my God, what?
Oh, man.
Well, it's funny, you alluded to it a little bit with the writing as well. And obviously writing's a big part of your work as well.
And yours.
Well, yes. But how did you come to start doing the writing? Was that something you'd always wanted to do as well?
Yeah, I it's just storytelling. That sounds really wanky, but it's storytelling.
No, not at all.
I just, ever since I was a kid, I was always making up stories at school and then coming home and telling them to my parents. And it was almost like a game. My parents would be like, did this really happen? Is this true? Or is this just another one of the stories? I just love telling stories, and that's come through acting and writing. You know, acting is just another form of telling a story. It's just a more physical way of doing it. And I feel like it's nice to have two very different versions of storytelling, because it's like the extrovert version and the introvert version. It's like, when, you know, every night I get the chance to be more physical and be more outgoing with it. But then there's times when I'm like, I just want to take a behind the scenes approach to this, and I'm just going to write my story down instead of being the one to sing it.
But we are all introverts and extroverts. I don't think one it's kind of like a spectrum. I don't think one person is oh, get your words out, Jim. I don't think one person is one. I think we are sort of a bit of both, and times in our lives and days determine which one we are. And I think that's okay. You don't have to be an introvert or an extrovert. You can be a bit of both whenever. And then if you're using that, as you're doing, to channel your creativity, well, then you're sort of, you know, practically making the best of your personality traits. I think that's a really good way of doing it.
Yeah.
Rather than some people, and I'm guilty of this, if I'm feeling introverted, I sort of lose that day, because I just feel like, oh, I'm not really, don't want to see anyone, don't want to do anything, I don't feel good enough. But actually, if you can then use that to your advantage, well, you're taking the power back a little.
Yeah, I've definitely seen like a massive overall change in my personality over the last decade. And I think that has a massive, that's got a lot to do with like social media. I think I used to be very like outgoing, very much got my energy from the people that I was surrounded by, and I loved going out with people, and I loved, you know, I'd come back feeling like, oh, that was the best day ever, and I just want to do it again immediately. And now I mean, I think it's also just coming with having a job as well. You do get to a point where you're like, I just want to be at home in my pajamas, eating ice cream in front of Netflix. That's all I want to do. So I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, growing up and having a full-time job where you do 8 shows a week and it's knackering. But I also think a lot of it has come with social media and being in, maybe not even social media, just being in the public eye more often. Like when you do book signings and stuff, instead of being like energized afterwards, now I'm like, I just want to go lie in a dark room with all the lights off for a little while, because that was too many people in one go. I feel like I filled my quota of how many faces I just saw at once.
Yeah, I think there's a daily quota, definitely.
Yeah.
And it might not just be people. It can almost be energy spent doing extroverted things. And I think my wife follows a lot of sort of life coachy people, and one of them talks about your sort of energy, your daily energy, and don't spend that energy early doors going on Twitter getting annoyed about stuff, because that will filter down. Don't be on Facebook or whatever, because then by the time you come down to do something you want to do that takes energy, like writing or whatever, you're at the bottom of your pit already. I don't think I've done that analogy in service, but I think that sort of made sense.
No, I got
no, that makes sense. That totally made sense. Yeah. Totally.
But, yeah, so I think when you're talking about sort of quota of people, I definitely get that. And again, it comes back to sort of self-management, doesn't it? And self-care, making sure that you're spending your time wisely, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm starting to learn a lot of lessons regarding that. Stage door, I keep bringing up stage door. It is one of my favourite things to talk about, mainly because I'm just so fascinated by the shift in stage door with the rise of social media. Like, stage door would, like, you 10 years ago, 20 years ago, stage door was like 3 people with autograph books. Now it's like 100 people with their phones and their cameras. Like, it's just this weird shift. And that's, you know, to do with like fandoms and fan culture. And it's also just to do with like the progression of technology. And it's, there's a lot of things that factor into it. But yeah, I've learned a lot of lessons to do with taking care of myself and understanding where my energy needs to be spent, especially with a job like theatre, where it takes a lot of energy and a lot of physical energy to do a show. So then if you're feeling particularly tired after a performance, you're like, do I want to spend my energy going to stage door and talking for the next hour and being switched on? Or am I going to save that energy for the show, the 2 shows that I've got tomorrow? Like, am I better off giving the paying ticket holders tomorrow the performance they deserve, or do I spend it with people who have had their show and this is just a bonus, this is just an extra?
Well, especially then when you chuck in, you don't, the uncertainty if you don't know what they're going to say, and then you're spending your energy defending yourself in a situation that's supposed to be just a nice little interaction.
Yeah, and the difficult thing is when you then come home to tweets being like, my daughter's now crying because you didn't come out of stage door. That's when it gets hard, because then you're like, I did go through a phase of just going out of stage door, whether I was shattered or not, and then made myself really ill and then had to take time off of my job. I wasn't able to do my job to the ability that I was meant to be doing my job, which meant I couldn't be there, which meant I disappointed even more people, and that made me feel even worse. And it just, you know, it's this like snowball, this spiral. So, I have had to just learn to do what's right for me. And if people complain about it, they're going to complain about it. Let them complain about it. I can't listen to that. I just have to do what's right for me and my job and the show, because that's the priority.
Absolutely. I think that's so wise. And you put yourself first. If you look after number one, then the rest of it falls into place. And then you can have more energy for other people. But you have to look after it. You can't be the sort of person where you're constantly serving other people, because then you'll have less to serve down the road anyway, because you'll be ruining yourself.
I listened to this amazing podcast by this amazing woman called Michelle Moore, and she had an episode called There Is an I in Team, because you can't serve your team if you aren't looking after you. So you have to work on you and the things that make you the best version of yourself, because then you can serve your team to the best of your abilities. Absolutely. And I was like, that is genius. How have I never heard that through the entirety of my life before? It's amazing. That's like, I think that was when I was like, that makes so much sense logically. And that's just gone in, that has sunk into my brain. And I think that was when I started making a few different changes in my life.
Yeah. And particularly when you're in the sort of theatre family as well, you're all going to try and pull your weight, aren't you?
Oh God, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We've all got a vital job to do, whether you're backstage, front of house, they don't get enough credit, because the amount of people that they have to deal with the audience far more than we have to deal with the audience. And if there's like a celebrity that was meant to be in the show that's ill that evening or isn't, you know, not scheduled to be there, it's the front of house who have to deal with that. They have to deal with screaming people and, you know, people calling them every name under the sun for something that's completely out of their control. It's not even like they were the ones who didn't turn up to work. It's like, sorry, I'm here doing my job. And my job is having to deal with people like you. So you pipe down.
They weren't the ones that, like, you know, poisoned Brian Blessed. It's not their fault that he's not there.
I know. We've all got a vital job to do. We're all just trying to do it to the best of our abilities. And, you know, as long as we all look after ourselves to the point where we can do it to the best of our abilities, everything should work smoothly. But as soon as someone's not taking care of themselves and not taking those steps to make sure that they're okay mentally and physically and emotionally, that's when things start to sort of...
What was that lady called?
Michelle Moore. MISHALMOORE, I think. I think I've got
it. I'm going to check that out and also get my wife to listen to it as well, because I think we would both benefit from listening to that. So she's thank great. You. I think that's the first time someone's recommended a podcast episode on our pod. So genuine takeaway from me today. That's great.
Carrie, obviously our podcast is about blank moments, and blank moments has been so many different things for different people. We've obviously talked about things today already that could be construed as being sort of blank or difficult moments. But I wondered, actually, performance wise, have you had any blank moments on stage?
Many, more than I care to admit. God, yeah. There are so many times when things go wrong on stage. And I think as a whole, actors are quite good at making sure that those things are never seen by the audience or they don't notice. And I've noticed over the years that there's so much you can get away with.
Oh, really?
In regards with things going wrong or, you know, having blank moments on stage. You'll come off and the audience will be like, that was the best show we've ever seen. I'm like, what about that, like, 5 minute silence when no one said anything? No? Okay. Or that set piece, you know, that didn't come on, that really vital piece of set that we all just pretended was there for 10 minutes. No? Okay. But no, I've definitely had my fair share of, like, forgetting props, forgetting lines and saying something else that definitely wasn't written in the script.
My wife's an actor, so sometimes when we go to the theatre, I think being a performer, she can sense it, so she'll like nudge me and be like, something should have happened there, something hasn't come down there.
Yeah.
But I actually really like those moments, because that reminds you that you're in a live performance, and that's the beauty of live performances, that things do go wrong. And it's almost like, actually, we're getting a slightly doctored special performance tonight. Yes, it might be because something's gone wrong, but that's actually the beauty of live performance.
That's the thing I love about theatre, is that it's never the same two nights in a row. I just love that. I think that's the magic of theatre. And obviously not at the moment, but I feel like that when you're sat in a theatre with the people around you, it's like a really special connection with the audience, because you're sat there like, we're all experiencing this thing that no one else is going to experience in the same way again. It's amazing. I think that's the closest to magic that the real world gets to.
I totally agree.
It's just incredible.
Because we are, by our nature, social beings. We want to be. We want to have shared experiences together. But it's very rare that actually we get to be with 100, 200, 300 people sharing this one experience all together. So I feel the same with any sort of live performing. Gigs. I used to go to so many gigs. I don't anymore. Having a baby is probably the reason. Comedy, you know, all of that. There's a real... If I went back to university, I would not do the thesis I did, which was on Trevor MacDonald randomly. And I can't remember why.
Wow. Yeah.
got to, too. But I would go back now and study live, the interaction between audiences and live performance, because I find it fascinating.
I do as well. I find fan culture especially just interesting. I think if I had gone to university, that's what I would have studied. That's what I would have focused on, because I'd find it so interesting. I just find the interactions between people in the public eye and audiences and viewers, I'm so fascinated by it and the way that it's changed in the last 2 decades.
Go for it.
I was going to say...
That was amazing. Brilliant. Really enjoyed that.
You go.
Thank you. I was just going to say that relationship with fans is. How different is that between the different things you do? Obviously, you've got lots of strings to your bow.
That was better than my question.
The live theatre. Okay, cool. I knew it would be. and obviously the book stuff and also YouTube. Are your audience more forgiving in one than another, or, you know?
Yes. Yeah, I think, like you said, people really enjoy it when things go wrong on stage because they feel like they've been witness to something completely different that no one else has got. So I think that it's never sort of like, oh, I want my money back because she didn't sing that note the same way that it is on the cast recording. It's like, well, I'll listen to the cast recording then.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's what that exists for. You got a special version of the show tonight because I sang a note wrong, you know what I mean? And I think they enjoy that, the audience, especially like hardcore fans of different shows. Like, if you're a hardcore fan of Les Mis and you've seen it 20 times and all of a sudden the barricade doesn't come on when it's meant to and they've had to stop the show, people are like, oh my God, it went wrong. I love it. They really enjoy getting that special experience. But yeah, it's completely different when it comes to something like books, obviously, because they expect the book to be perfect when they get it. And there's like no leeway. And even if they don't like the book, well, you should have done better. It's not just it isn't the book for you. It's like, no, it's your fault because you should have written a better story or a story that I liked. There's like no forgiveness.
Yeah. I've just wasted weeks reading this.
Yeah, and that's your fault.
It's your fault for writing it, yeah.
Yeah, but then on the flip side of that, I feel like people who are fans of my books are more dedicated because it takes a long time to read a book. It, you know, they invest more and they invest emotionally in characters because you're making them feel things that they wouldn't have felt had they not read your book. And maybe they've got thoughts in their heads that they have never been able to articulate before. And all of a sudden, one line in your book puts everything into perspective for them. So they invest in just completely different ways. And it's almost like a gratitude thing. Like, people are like, thank you for writing that book.
Yeah.
Whereas no one ever comes up to me and goes, thank you for auditioning for that part and getting that role. Like, it's, you know what I mean? They'll thank the writers of the show for writing Heathers and Les Mis. They'll, you know, they'll thank the creators of the show, and I'm just there facilitating that storytelling. So they might, you know, enjoy my performance or my portrayal of a part, but they'll never like thank me for being there, you know what I mean? Because it's not, I didn't make it. It's not my thing that I made. I was just there being part of the story. That was my job, just to tell it. But if, when you've written a book, they're like, thank you for writing that book because it's made me feel things that I didn't expect to feel, or you've put something into perspective for me that I never would have thought of myself. And YouTube is like hardcore screaming fans.
Yeah.
Like that, that's a, I'm almost scared of YouTube when it comes to stuff like that. Like, I remember like YouTube gatherings becoming a big thing, and it used to be like a Facebook invite and 50 people would turn up in Hyde Park and we'd all chat and have a lovely time. And then over the course of like 5 years, maybe like half a decade, it's gone from 50 people in Hyde Park to 15,000 people at the XL Centre.
Wow.
All of them screaming so loud that you can't even hear what you're saying to that crowd.
Wow. It's like being, like it's being the Beatles.
I was going to say,
it's like being a rock star, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's because there's also an age difference. I think the people who go to theatre or read adult women's fiction are obviously going to be older than kids who watch YouTube. You know, you've got to be 13 to have a YouTube account. So, you know, the age range is just younger, especially if you're making content that is for younger people as well, like teenagers. They just behave differently because they're younger. And that's just, yeah, that's just the nature of being young and obsessed with something. I was definitely like that with My Chemical Romance, who's my favourite band, but I definitely had moments with that band. So all the audiences do behave in different ways, but it is funny when you find someone who like spans all three of them, who's like interested in, like found me through YouTube and then bought my book and really enjoyed my book, but they found out about it through YouTube and then bought tickets to see a show. And then, you know, it's just, it's really interesting when you find people who like span all three audiences and who they are as people.
And I guess we should as well, you know, give a nod to, you've got so many hardcore followers who absolutely love what you do. And we've talked about the trolls and people that make life difficult, but it must be so nice to know, and you're saying there with the book as well, that you are sort of really helping people through stuff sometimes, or changing their life a little bit, and there are these people that really respect you for that, and almost rely on you. And I guess there comes a responsibility with that in a way sometimes to keep doing it for them. But it's a nice, you know, you're making a difference for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think that's more overwhelming than any of the negative stuff. And I think that's almost why I not try and think about it, but I do, I don't know, I guess... I don't know. You know what? You're making me think about things that I've never thought about before. But I do think like that responsibility or that, you know, gratitude that people have is sometimes so potent that it is way more overwhelming than just a negative comment. And so sometimes I'm like, I don't have the energy or the capacity to sit and cry, even like happy cry for hours about these wonderful things and these wonderful people and the wonderful things that people are saying. I'm like, I can't think about that right now because I've got stuff to do today and I can't cry. I can't sit and be overwhelmed by this today. It's amazing though. It's like, and it's crazy. Like you see people with like millions and millions and squillions and billions of followers and you see them go, I don't understand how dedicated your audience is. Like I've got friends who have got millions of subscribers and then they'll look at my audience and they're like, they're so hardcore and they're so dedicated and they're almost like surprised by it. And my theory is that usually when someone's got like millions of subscribers, it's because they've had like several viral videos and people subscribe because of the virality of it. They don't subscribe because they enjoy that person as a human being. They do it because they enjoyed that one video of whatever it was.
Yeah.
Whereas I've been on YouTube for like 10 years and I've got 600,000 people subscribed, which is, you know, not to be sniffed at.
That's a lot of people.
It's a, you know, huge amount of people, but it's kind of like plateaued that it's been like 600,000 people for the last like 3 years, but they're so invested in what I do and who I am as a person that they'll buy tickets to see shows and they'll buy books and they'll turn up when I've said I'm doing a concert, I'd love you to come, like, and they'll comment and engage and watch live stream. You know, they're so invested as opposed to just click subscribe on a whim because they liked that one 10-second video you made.
Have you?
And it's amazing.
Have you seen the show? I think it's called Title of Show. It's a musical about writing a musical. And
I've heard of it, but I've not seen it.
We saw an interesting performance of it at the Edinburgh Fringe a couple of years ago, and there's a song in it called I'd rather be 9 people's favourite thing than 100 people's 9th favourite thing. And I think, and that, I remember...
That's exactly what it
is. Yeah, and I remember hearing that song thinking, oh my God, I relate to that so much. And it's what you're saying there. You'd rather have a core audience of people that love you, and that's your people, rather than millions of millions. I bet those people with millions, that person subscribed on that one video and then never watches anything, the rest of their stuff.
Mm.
Whereas you've got people that are really invested. And I think that's... I'd much rather have that.
I was called into Instagram, hilariously. Who says that? I was called in to have a meeting with Instagram at the beginning of the year. The beginning of the year. And it was because I did a fundraiser when they released their donation sticker on stories. I was like, oh, this is really cool. I'm going to give it a go. And ended up raising like £4,000 for Papyrus, which is a charity that the fact that Instagram has come up with that is genius. There's another reason why Instagram's just my fave. I promise I'm not paid by them to say this, by the way. I've realised I've talked a lot about Instagram today.
Yeah, so you've had a meeting with them.
but I had this meeting with them and they were like, we're just confused by your statistics. And I was like, right. Because they're privy to analytics that I can't access on the app.
Yeah.
So they were like, if you've got a brand like Kellogg's, for instance, and they're, you know, sharing their adverts and their pictures and whatever, if they got 1-2% engagement, like 1-2% of their subscribed audience engaging with their pictures and their posts, they would be absolutely thrilled. That's like amazing. 1-2%. I was like, that's sounds low. 1-2% of your audience. That's crazy. And they were like, you know, most influencers have sort of between 3-4%, which is why big companies go to influencers to advertise their stuff, because they've got a higher percentage of their audience engaging. you've got 7 to 8% of your audience engaging with. And I was like, oh my God, that's so cool. And I'm so convinced that it's because it's like, it's been a slow burn. It's not been like one big viral picture or one big viral video. It's been like a slow sort of reveal of who I am as a person and what I'm up to and like following me around for the day. And yeah, it's amazing when it's sort of put into perspective like that, when you actually hear sort of the weird and like the numbers side of things.
Yeah.
That's incredible. It's a bit weird. And lovely that so many people are investing in you as a person, I think.
It's a bit scary. Like I said, it's very overwhelming and I sort of try not to think about it too much because I will just sort of run away screaming from everything. But yeah, it is amazing. And I do feel so grateful that it's kind of turned out that way, because it so easily could have just gone another way. I could have had it's only because I'm crap at YouTube. Like I've never had a viral video. Like everyone's had a viral video. I've never had a viral video. It's only because I'm terrible at making videos or terrible at like appealing to a mass market. I've just been making like really niche things for the last 10 years and it's just managed to build up this amazing audience of really dedicated and like-minded people.
Yeah. Niche is the way forward. Yeah, niche is the way forward.
Yeah. I agree. But yeah, it is all just like-minded people. It's people who like a very strange mixture of the things that I like. It's like Disney, Doctor Who, musical theatre, reading, books. It's a very like unique circle of things, unique group of things that people like, and it kind of just matches with my interests as well.
But yeah, and well, yeah, likewise. But also, you're a very likable and nice person. So I think that obviously
comes.
No.
Oh, it's very sweet.
No, but it's so true. No, but it's true though that, you know, that obviously comes across in what you do. So I think, you know, that's got a lot to do with it, I think.
Oh, thank you. I feel like I'm the most annoying person on the planet. Thank you.
Carrie, we normally end the podcast by getting our guests to give their advice on blank moments.
It's ending. I'm having such a nice time, though. That's disappointing.
I'm having
Sorry. I always feel guilty about taking up our guests too much of their time.
Oh, yeah, because in lockdown, my schedule's really, really full. I've got so much to do at the moment.
We can make this a really long answer, don't worry.
String the answer out. No, you've been so open and honest with us, and it's been really, really fascinating talking to you. But we know that our listeners really, they like and they engage when our guests give their advice on black moments. And obviously that's interpretive. It could be literal black moments or, you know, difficult periods in life. But do you have any advice that you would give to our listeners?
My advice to myself, more than anyone, has always just been perseverance. Like, keeping going. And I feel like that kind of applies to anything. I always say it when people ask me about like the acting industry and, you know, if they feel like they're not getting anywhere or, you know, or people who just want to get into the industry, I always say it's perseverance, because this industry is just rife with rejection. You're going to get knocked back time and time again. You know, you're going to get 100 no's before you get a yes. And then when you finally do get your yes, you're going to get 100 more no's after that. That's just the nature of this horrible industry. But as soon as you decide to give up, you are making it 100% certain that you're never going to get that yes.
Exactly.
And you've only got yourself to blame for that. Like, you've got to keep, if it's what you really want, like that, obviously there's a million reasons why people might give up or might just say, you know, this isn't for me anymore. But if it's something that you really, truly want and you genuinely think that you've got somewhere to go with it and you think that it's something that you could achieve one day, you've got to persevere and you've got to push through those hard moments and those rejections. Otherwise, you're never going to see that yes. And I think that's, you know, true with life as well. I feel like if you're having dark times, you can't throw in the towel, because what are the chances that it's going to be dark forever? Like that, what are the odds of it, you know, being dark for the rest of your life? You know, that's just so, the probability of that is very, very low. But if you give up and, you know, throw the towel in, you're never going to get to those good days and those brighter days. So I always say that perseverance is just the thing that you've got to hold on to. Hope, really.
Yeah.
You've just got to have hope.
I totally agree.
And hope is a wonderful thing, I think.
I agree. And I feel like in times like this as well, you know, what are the chances that we are going to spend the rest of our lives self-isolating? Quite low, I hope. Fingers crossed, unless this really is the end of the world.
God. But no, I think you're right. I hope you're right. God.
Yeah. So I am just sort of holding on to hope that we are going to get to a point where we look back and go, that was a bit weird.
Exactly.
That was a very strange time in life, wasn't it?
We
are
going
to get to a point where this was just a distant memory.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got through it.
Yeah.
We got through it.
Exactly.
Perseverance and hope.
Yes. What a great way to end
Love
the podcast.
It.
Thank you so, so much.
Thank
it's been
you.
Such a treat
it's been
to talk
wonderful.
To you.
I'm gutted it's over.
Yeah. Yeah, well, me too. Thank you. Honestly, genuinely, it's been so lovely to talk to you and real privilege to sit. And I know we always like to do this in person, but this is obviously the second best thing we can do. And so it's, you know, really appreciate
thank you
your
so
time.
Much.
Well, when lockdown's over, we'll just pretend that this one didn't happen and we'll have to do like a
yeah, exactly. This is the warm up.
An in person
yeah.
one.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Thanks, yeah. Carrie. It's been so nice to meet you.
Oh, thank you so much. Such a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, there you go. What a talented person. What a really nice person. And just some really good, great advice and some good stories there. We really went into the whole sort of social media aspect of things, and she was really open about it. And it's made me almost sort of rethink a lot about interactions on social media, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really appreciated Carrie being so open and candid about some of the really difficult moments that she's had to go through, you know, even to the point where she's had to seek out counselling because it's been so rough on her. And, you know, and we alluded to it on the podcast about the fact that, you know, there's a human beings on the end of these accounts and, you know, a bit more kindness and taking the time to just think a little bit more before you sort of ripping into
people. Yeah, because there's different level. Yeah. Obviously, you know, she was telling us stories about, you know, the stage door. And obviously that's a different level of person that goes to that length to say that, but I think we are all probably guilty of sending messages on tweets and stuff sometimes, not directly, but I mean sending a tweet out that actually doesn't need to be sent, and it's something negative that doesn't need to be out there. As Carrie said, if you don't like it, you don't need to tell us about it. I think we've all done it at times, so it has it's definitely made me rethink about what I'm putting out there. I made a decision recently a few months ago to try, and I've not been very good at sticking to it, just using Twitter for jokes, just putting jokes out there, see if they work, if they don't, whatever. And you do fall off the wagon a bit sometimes and end up getting into discussions and stuff. But
it's politics normally that sort
I've
of
tried,
tends to sort of, and I think that's what I've found is that I end up getting into sort of political kind of pylons, I guess.
Yeah.
And trying to avoid those as well, you know, because that's sort of a murky
it
area.
It is, and talking to Carrie today has definitely made me rethink that. And I think we can all, it's almost like an added little filter. We can all add a little filter in before we tweet something. Does this need to be out there? Does this need to be sent? Does this person need to know I feel this? And I'd imagine 50% of the time probably no. So,
And I think, do you know what? We have a responsibility as well, I think, as creatives to know that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And I think I try and avoid that as well, to be down on things. If I don't like something, I just won't mention it. And that is, you know, we like to have an opinion on stuff and the stuff that we like and we don't. But I do tend to find that I will send out more like a positive thing about something that I've really enjoyed, and something I haven't, then I don't need to.
Because whatever you think about something, even if you really hated it, someone still spent time creating that thing and like poured their heart into it. And you know, it wasn't for you. So what? You might be one out of 10 people that hated it, and everyone else liked it. So it's not
exactly.
Anyway, so thank you, Carrie, for joining us, because that's been
What a treat! And hopefully, this is maybe part one of another.
Yeah.
Of a two-part.
Absolutely. When all this ends, which it will. You know, she ended the podcast. You know, with some really good advice that, you know, this too shall pass is what was going through my head when she said that. So I think that's very applicable for lots of life situations. So thank you, Carrie, for being a great guest, and thank you, Giles, for just being
you. Well, thank you, Jim. Thank you.
Yeah. Nice to say thank you, isn't it?
It's very nice. It's a nice word. Well, it's not two words, in fact.
Excellent. Right. That's it. Thank you, listeners.
That's it for another. That's a that is the end of this episode, which I think is episode 70 of the Blank Podcast.
Crazy. What a number. What a number.
30 to go to the big 100.
Wow. We need to do something special for that, don't we?
Yeah,
we'll think about it. We let 50 come and go, so we'll do something special for 100.
We'll get Tom Hanks or something to do
Could we do a live podcast? Do a live podcast, maybe?
A live podcast for number 100. That is a
brilliant
idea.
Could we do that one at Latitude, which was such fun?
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, this is more an admin meeting.
Send us your ideas for what you think.
No one's listening.
Episode 100.
They've all turned off.
Well, they are. One person will.
Yeah.
Please, that person that's listening still, give us your ideas on what the 100th episode should be.
Let's start planning. Anyway, stay safe, everyone. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again very soon.
Media Podcast.